This talk was in response to the massacre of the Bible study group in Charleston, South Carolina, 2016. Once again, I have been struck by the brutality of the scene, as well as its disturbing familiarity. This is not some far-off terrorist group's work. This happened in a church much like this one, in a city much like ours. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch has said that Dylann Roof was radicalized in the direction or the frame of race, as opposed to Islam or some other ideology. We don't know how this frame was chosen, but there is certainly plenty of racism available as a model, as well as online encouragement for his process of growing hatred. It's important to remember that this young man was not born with his face displaying the bitter scowl shown in the photos, that his views emerged as a result of many causes and conditions, some of which are cultural, some likely out of his personal karma. Along the way, he made increasingly unskillful choices, reinforcing a deluded view of himself and the world. And as we so often note, it seems that the very first element on the Noble Eightfold Path has great relevance here. That is the exhortation to wise view, or seeing things as they in fact are. This is one way of stating the reason for our practice, since Vipassana meditation steadily clarifies what is really going on. Basic to wise view is to see who I am and who you are, that we are of one essence, differing only in form, which of course is temporary and only of relative importance. Roof's delusion was based on a perceived separation and alienation between himself and those others who happen to have a darker covering over the body. We each have our own version of this process, all the ways in which we are not like them. We separate ourselves from Republicans, from the person who displays road rage or eats a lot of meat, for example. The problem here is not so much discernment, although some habits and acts are certainly more skillful and more life-enhancing than others. Here we are talking more about the holding tightly to my opinions, about the need to prove myself right and the other wrong. This stance is fear-based and ego-driven. And the central discovery of the Buddha was the freedom that comes with letting go of attachments, including attachment to view. This is from Peter Tsang's book, The Fifth Discipline Field Book. Among the tribes of northern Natal in South Africa, the most common greeting is Sawubona. It literally means, I see you. As a member of the tribe, you would respond, Sikona, which means, I am here. The order of the exchange is important. Until you see me, I do not exist. It's as if, when you see me, you bring me into existence. This meaning, implicit in the language, is part of the spirit of Ubuntu, which says, a person is a person because of other people. If you grow up with this perspective, your identity is based upon the fact that you are seen, that people around you respect and acknowledge you as a person. Contrast that with this writing by Sam Keen on how to create an enemy. Start with an empty canvas. sketch in the broad outline of the forms of men, women, and children. Dip into the unconsciousness well of your own disowned darkness with a wide brush and stain the strangers with the sinister hue of the shadow. Trace onto the face of the enemy the greed, hatred, carelessness you dare not claim as your own. Obscure the sweet individuality of each face. Erase all hints of the myriad loves, hopes, and fears that play through the kaleidoscope of every infinite heart. Twist the smile until it forms the downward arc of cruelty. Strip flesh from bone until only the abstract skeleton of death remains. Exaggerate each feature until man is metamorphosized into beast, vermin, insect. Fill in the background with malignant figures from ancient nightmares, devils, demons, myrmidons of evil. When your icon of the enemy is complete, you will be able to kill without guilt and slaughter without shame. The thing you destroy will have become merely an enemy of God, an impediment to the sacred dialectic of history. A few weeks ago, we explored the phenomenon of forgiveness, essential to the opening of the heart and the development of the Brahma Viharas. And in news of the Charleston tragedy, we have had a stunning display of the practice of forgiveness. When offered the opportunity to speak directly to the killer of their family and friends, those who spoke to a person were able to move beyond their grief and offer forgiveness to the person who so brutally changed their lives. As we watch this take place, however, there is a tendency to discount the forgiveness spoken by the victims. They're just saying that. They couldn't really forgive him so quickly. We might muse as we recall our own resistance to such open-hearted kindness in the face of hatred. It behooves us to be very cautious with such judgment and to look instead at the defensiveness that births it. Cynicism is a hardening of the heart intended to protect it from perceived harm. Is this really the direction in which the Buddha would have us move? Rather, when we see the fruits of their action, the deep, strong movement toward one another, toward kindness, caring, warmth, support, and unity shown in South Carolina, it is evident that something momentous happened here. True, racism and hatred are not dead by any means, but the needle has been moved ever so slightly toward peace and healing. And this arose out of the ability of a small group of people, horrendously treated, opening to the possibility of their own healing and that of the perpetrator. So what does this have to do with me, we might ask? I'm not racist. Really? Did you grow up in America? Did I? At a memorial service here in town last week for the deceased, the pastor of Bates Memorial Baptist Church related an item that had escaped the notice of most. After his capture, Dylan Roof stated that the love he felt emanating among the group gathered there was so palpable that he almost changed his mind. One last reading. Tell me the weight of a snowflake, a coal mouse asked a wild dove. Nothing more than nothing, was the answer. In that case, I must tell you a marvelous story, the coal mouse said. I sat on the branch of a fir close to its trunk when it began to snow. Not heavily, not in a raging blizzard, no, just like in a dream without any violence. Since I didn't have anything better to do, I counted the snowflakes settling on the twigs and needles of my branch. Their number was exactly 3,741,952. When the next snowflake dropped onto the branch, nothing more than nothing, as you say, the branch broke off. Having said that, the coal mouse flew away. The dove, since Noah's time and authority on the matter, thought about the story for a while and finally said to herself, "Perhaps there is only one person's voice lacking for peace to come about in the world."